Lynn Barbee, LYNNBARBEE, and I am the CIO at Atlantic Packaging here in Wilmington.
So Lynn Barbee, you essentially grew up in Carolina Beach.
I did. My family moved here when I was a young boy. I wasn't born here in the early 70s, and I've been here most of my life, but I've also had experiences outside of the community. I went away to graduate school. I've been away for a few jobs, but I've always been here, owned property here most of that time, and it's always been home.
CIO, that's Chief Information Officer?
That is correct. So I have my background is in information technology, software development, those sorts of things. And so CIO, I run the entire IT operation for Atlantic Packaging here.
And what does Atlantic Packaging do? What kind of a company is it?
So Atlantic Packaging is a very diverse company. They have some manufacturing, and they also do distribution of packaging supplies. The easiest way to think about it is that shrink wrap that comes around everything. That's one of our big pieces of our business. But then we're in other things as well, and in paperboard converting, where we make the filter frames and the air filters that go in your house, that sort of stuff. So very diverse, but basically manufacturing and distribution.
It's a pretty broad slate of candidates for the couple of open seats.
Correct. There's four of us going for two seats in the town of Carolina Beach for town council. I know all of them. We're all, you know, we see each other regularly, and it's really been rewarding to share with them. It's more of a four people trying to do the right thing for the town, trying to lead the town, than it is a competition. We're more friends than competitors, I think. But there are definitely differences among us.
What are some of those differences? Why do you think it's necessary to throw your hat in the ring?
For me, having been a long-term resident, I think right now with the growth in New Hanover County and certainly in the beach communities, there's some tensions, obviously, around that growth and how that's going to happen. I think I'm not positive this, but I believe I have been in Carolina Beach longer than all the other candidates combined. So I provide that historical perspective, but I'm also a progressive thinker. So I think I bridge that gap between our older residents, or longer, not older in age, but longer term residents, and some of the newer residents. I understand what the new people are looking for and what their concerns are. You know, they just got here, but they want a voice as well. And I understand some of the angst from the older crowd that see things growing and changing. Change is hard for people.
Specifically, what are we talking about? Where does the tension show up in issues in Carolina Beach?
Carolina Beach is an interesting political landscape. It's always been that way my entire life. I always tell people I would rather have a very involved community, even if it's somewhat combative at times, than a place where no one cares. Because to me, that's healthy. It's very healthy to see that interaction. So we see it around development. You know, people take sides of whether this should be built or that should be built. We see it around services from the town. We had a very active group around the Island Greenway before that was built. Some for, some against, but it's those sorts of things. Change in general, anytime you want to change anything, half the people are going to show up for it and half are going to be against it. And I see myself as I'll certainly have opinions. It's not my job to moderate that, but I'll have my opinions. But I think my experience will help bridge some of that.
Two town managers have been fired within 12 months. What's happening there?
It's interesting. When you look at that whole situation, I think there's some politics involved in terms of and I don't mean on any nefarious activity by anyone. That's not what I'm trying to say. But the town people put a tremendous amount of pressure on council for things. The council, in turn, puts a tremendous amount of pressure on the town manager to achieve those. Quite often, most citizens will go to council before they go to the town manager, surprising him quite often. So I think there's this unusual dynamic that needs to be worked out in Carolina Beach to empower the town manager. With that said, the last town manager, my personal opinion, was a poor hire. I think some of that's wrapped up in not having good interviewing practices. I would say. Coming from the private sector, I've hired hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people, had hours and hours and hours of training over the years. And I don't know that we're following any disciplined approach to that hiring. I think we also probably think that we can't afford the best and the brightest sometimes because we're a small town. I run into that in business a lot. I have my job over the last 20 years is a lot of turnarounds where I go into companies that are struggling and failing. And one of the most common things I see is we feel like we're not, the company feels like, oh, well, we have to just do what we can do. And I don't think that way. I think excellence is excellence. You should go after excellence and figure out how to do it. So I think we ought to go after the best and brightest town manager we can get and let the chips fall where they may in terms of the cost of that, because people say, oh, the town manager makes a lot of money. But when you look at the cost of change, the cost to replace a town manager, to retrain that or reacclimate that person, it's very expensive. So it's a complicated situation. There's no short answer to it. But I think going forward, if we can put slow down, take our time to find the job, find the right person, wait for the right person, don't feel like you have to settle, I think we can fix it.
The Local Government Commission has warned the town about this declining, now precipitously low fund balance. This is a trend that's been going on now for several years. Why do you think staff and council didn't really pay attention to that and do something about it? What's gone wrong there? I mean, we've heard from some elected officials a kind of not my job response. What's the answer?
That's not a good response. I don't like that response. That it's not my job. It's all my job if I win this position, or at least to influence it. So I'm not sure that it's being ignored. I think that might be overplaying it a little bit. I think there's been pressure on the town to do certain things that's made them dip into that. There's also some of the storm issues and the cost of that. That's not the whole reason, but have dipped into that fund. I was very pleased when this year's budget was passed to see that that was planned for and money was being put back into that fund balance. So I feel like we've turned the corner. One of the critical pieces of my platform, the highest priority is that financial responsibility, and that fund balance is key to that. We have to have that. I don't think people quite realize if we don't have that buffer of money, let's say a storm comes and something happens to us, and yes, we're going to get some money probably back from FEMA, but that's not guaranteed, and it takes time to get it. Our job is to get the town up and running and back to business as quickly as possible. That takes money. We have to pay people to do it. I think if you look at how the outside folks would see us, so people from Raleigh or Charlotte and that sort of thing, a storm comes by, the first thing you want to know is the beach open. Is a town open for business? And our job as a town, that's all of us, is to say, we're great. We're open for business. Come see us. Come visit. Spend money. Tourism's a big part of it's the largest part of our economy. And so we have to have that fund balance. So you'll see me push very hard to keep that growing up to a sustainable level. I mean, I don't think we need to stockpile money, but we need that safe balance.
Some of the other beach towns in New Hanover County, Wrightsville Beach, I think, is at over 100%. And Curie Beach is at about 75%, which is a huge difference. And you're saying you don't need to stockpile money, but you are thinking about future disasters like another storm.
Correct. I think the next council has to decide what that would be. Our current council, I have sat through the meetings and listened to them debate that. Some people believe it should be 50. Some people think it should be 30. So I don't think we have an answer, but I don't think it's hard to come up with one. We have history and we know what's happened. We've had some pretty rough storms in my lifetime, and we should look back and see what that's going to cost, and we should strive for that number. To me, it's math.
So when you talk about financial responsibility, you talk about building up that fund balance. What else does that mean to you specifically?
So one of the issues that I noticed when I first started thinking about how the town was operating is a longer range planning. So the budgeting process, and I think some of this is rooted in just culture of a beach town. Beach town, if you go back to the 40s, people would just, they would invest their money in a snow cone shop, let's say, and they would make some money over the summer, and then they tried to survive during the winter. So it created this cyclical annual culture of survival before we had this influx of people that we and investment that we have now. So I see that in the budgeting process. One of the things that I miss greatly in the budgeting process from the way the town does it versus what I see in the private sector is a budget has to align to a strategy. You don't just budget money. What are you trying to accomplish, and where are you trying to go with this? So I would like to see more of that. I'd like to see more in terms of communication back to the public. How are things going? There's very little data provided to, let me give an example, it's easier. So when you say you need a certain amount of money to run the Parks and Rec Department, well, historically, what has that been? Give me a five-year view of Parks and Recreation and how that's been going. Give me a five-year view. We don't see that in the public. We just see a number. Well, where did the number come from? Is that good? Is it bad? Is it more than what we've been doing? Is it less than what we've been doing? So you leave it to the public to go pull all these budgets and wade through them. And in generally, they're not going to do that. They have lives. They have kids. They have, you know, they're trying to get the kids to school. So I think it's incumbent upon us. A part of transparency is not just saying, well, the data was available. Transparency is presenting it to you in a way that makes sense. I think most of our residents, we just had a 2 cents tax increase to for the 2020 budget. And I'm not sure, I think I understand, but I don't think your average person walking the street understands what was the 2 cent for. Basically, the 2 cent was for two things. It was to put money in the fund balance, and it was for some pay equity increases that were required for town staff. It's an easy story. I mean, there was nothing nefarious about that. It's easy to tell that story, but it's incumbent upon the council and the staff to tell that story. I think that breeds some of the contention that we see is because we're not pushing transparency.
You're not communicating proactively.
Correct.
Is what you're saying.
Correct.
So you talk about people having lives and kids and not being able to do things like comb through the town's budget. Well, maybe your kids are grown, but you do have a full-time job. Sounds like it's a pretty high-level full-time job. So how would you balance being on town council in that job?
So I looked at doing this before. I'm always looking for ways to volunteer and help the town. Even small ways are fine. And up to this point in my career, and like you said, I had kids. I'm kind of climbing the ladder, if you will, if you want to say. I was very focused on my career. My career is still very important to me. But I believe with my kids grown now and out of the house, my wife and I are also in a situation where she works out of town during the week, so I'm home alone. So that gives me tons of time during the week to focus on this and gets me away from the TV and the potato chips, which is probably healthier for me anyway. So I think I have the time. I think I can balance it. My entire career, I've balanced school and work, and you know, I'm kind of a problem solver, and once my brain starts turning, I can't turn it off. So I don't think it'll be a problem. I'm not saying there won't be some days I'll be tired, that's for sure.
Have you ever run for public office or held public office before?
I have never ran for public office. The only thing I've ever been elected for, which I don't really consider public office, is my HOA board. But I was elected, so at least somebody, I had a message that resonated with someone.
Stormwater management has been an issue in Carolina Beach, and there have been some improvements, but it's still an issue that the town needs to think about. Do you have ideas about how to make that work better?
So I'm not a stormwater engineer, obviously, and I don't understand the intricacies of what they're dealing with at that level. I will say that it fits into that long-range planning. A lot of our water, sewer, stormwater issues could have been foreseen if we had broadened the horizon, the planning horizon a little bit and planned for this growth. It's always been, you know, we're getting to that density level to where everything you changed, water has to go somewhere and almost certainly is going to negatively impact someone or something or some component of stormwater. So we no longer have the luxury of just, we'll figure it out later. We're required now to do that planning. And I think, you know, I think mitigating the issues we have is something we're going to have to just continue to do. I think we're going to have to work on a longer range funding plan for some of those items.
Speaking of long-range funding plans, beach nourishment, the town recently had its beach renourished. Are there other mechanisms for shoreline management that you think the town should be considering, like an overall strategy, instead of just how do we fund this year's beach nourishment?
So that's a broad question. I'd like to start with something that I have proposed. I think one of the issues I see is that we do not have anyone specifically tasked with shoreline management, what I would call coastal infrastructure. It's always fallen onto either a council member or the town manager. There are other people under the town manager. I don't mean to slight them in any way that are working on this. But it's a very complex system, both from an engineering standpoint, physics of shoreline management. I've spent hours and hours going through Corps of Engineer reports that are tough to digest. They're very technical about why things are done a certain way. There's the legislative landscape as to what you can and can't do, which is very complicated. And then there's the funding landscape. Where does the money come from? And one of the proposals I have made in my platform is I think we need someone, it's adding staff and it's going to add cost to the town, but I think we need someone who that is their job, is that coastline management, because if we continue to do it the way we're doing it, we're going to miss. We make mistakes. Mistakes are costly. It's as important to our economy as the bridge to get over Snow's Cut, right? It's really that important, because if the beach goes away, all it takes is one news report hitting, you know, the statewide news that, you know, houses are falling into the ocean at Carolina Beach. And guess what stops? Investment stops. People stop buying houses. The whole economy slows down.
Well, so that's what you'd think. That would be the intuitive part of it. But there are other places in the country, like Long Beach Island in New Jersey, which is a barrier island.
Yep, and know it well.
After Sandy, that's what people thought. And now there are actually larger homes and more luxurious homes in places where Sandy washed away smaller homes.
Correct. It will come back. What we have seen traditionally in my 40 plus years here is storms are actually good for us in a kind of a crazy way. You know, we don't like to see them come, but it's a part of the regeneration that happens. If you go back and look at development, post-storm development, we've had booms after every major storm.
So it's a counterintuitive cycle.
It is. So it's not that we never want that to happen, but we have. It's about being prepared for it.
Are you prepared? Is the town prepared for a major storm, like a Category 3 or higher?
I don't know that. Yes. So in terms of as much as you can be prepared, right? So there, in terms of emergency procedures and staffing and how they ran, we just saw this in our in Dorian. Minor storm, turned out not to be a big deal. So
did
you
evacuate?
I did not. So I chose to stay home.
And for the record, I just gave you the side eye because, you know, there was an order about that.
And yeah. And I, for the record, I took a second to think, oh, how do I answer that?
Okay.
So, no, I chose not to evacuate this time. I kind of have a rule. My rule is three, four, five, you know, hit the road, one or two stay. And so I've been through plenty of one and two storms. And, you know, I think it's a decision that I'm getting a little off track, but it's a decision that everybody has to take, and they have to take very seriously. And I don't fault anyone for staying, and I don't fault anyone for going. I think it's your self-protective instinct that you have to follow. And
which,
so I felt comfortable with this.
Fair enough. And that is an interesting conversation for people who are stakeholders and residents on barrier islands, because you do have to. It is a personal decision in a way, unless you get into trouble. And then first responders are then putting their lives at risk.
Correct.
When there had been an order. And I get what you're saying, and I'll leave it there for
okay.
your sake. I think it's a conversation that will probably continue for a while, because it's something that did come up after Dorian. And, you know, who obeyed the orders and who didn't and why. And
correct.
How do people feel about that? So you said you think the town is essentially as prepared as it can be for a major storm.
Right. I think it's a refining process. I'm not saying that you there's not never more to do. When you get into Category 4 and Category 5, some of the damage that we've seen where your major infrastructure is wiped out, it's difficult, right? I mean, you go look at towns that that's happened to, and it's a multi-year rebuilding process for them at times. So I think that fiscal responsibility that we talked about is critical. I think we have to be prepared for anything that throws at us, because that's what the taxpayers basically want the town to do, right? I mean, that's a core piece of us, is to have that plan. They expect water, sewer, stormwater, streets, power, you know, not that we provide the power, but we provide the infrastructure for it. And I think we have to be prepared for those things.
There has been criticism about parking in Carolina Beach, the availability of it, the size of it, the fact that there are now more private purveyors of parking spaces. Some people have criticized Lanier and said that company shouldn't be managing parking for the town. What would parking look like under your watch if you didn't have to build consensus and could just say, this is how it's going to go? What would it look like?
Okay, so parking is a major issue in any coastal town that you go to, right? Because everyone's trying to get to a precious resource, which is the beach. So it's not unique in any way at Carolina Beach. I do think parking, the parking is a little overplayed, in that when you look at, let me kind of play both sides and devil's advocate with myself. So I go down on Memorial Day weekend, one of the busiest ones I've seen in many, many years. The beach is completely full. I mean, there is literally nowhere to put a towel. And all of those people have parked. They're all parked somewhere. So we hear a lot about parking, but obviously there was parking, or I didn't see anybody turning around and going back. On those crowded weekends, it creates a little angst with people because, okay, I had to circle the block three times. I get it. I understand. So I think parking is better than it's played out to be. With that said, it's needs to be convenient as possible. So I think what we are going to see over time is a mix. I'd like to see, you asked me about exactly what I would do. I like the private parking options. That's a business that provides jobs. You know, I get it. So if a mix of the town-run parking and private parking, I think is good. I would like to see some things around signage be better. I think it has confused some tourists who've pulled into private lots, and then they, or even locals who pulled into private lots, you know, think they're covered and they're not. So I think we could organize a little better. One of the issues that comes up, and maybe you're going there, maybe not, is, you know, parking decks and that nature. I would really struggle with the investment, because the cost is huge, and passing that on to our taxpayers, I don't think it'll pay for itself. So I'm a little concerned. I certainly would listen if we could come up with a financially sound plan, get funding, grants, whatever it may be, to help offset some of that, then I'm not totally against it. But I don't think I want to see the town. We have other things that require those resources right now, like you said, water, sewer, stormwater, which to me are more important.
So let's say you're elected and you get one free pass at something. You get to make something happen by the end of your term the way you want it to happen. What is that one thing?
Boy, that's a great question, because I got 100 things. But okay, we'll pick one. I would say if we could do one thing, we would plan earlier. We would have a sound financial package with the data to our residents to understand where we are on the budget, put it in perspective for them, and stop some of this. I believe that would stop some of this angst around the budget and suspicion about where money's going. Let's remove all that and let's get to looking forward. I think it stops us from being able to look forward as a town sometimes, because we're mired down in the muck, you know, and then when money's involved, it's just human nature. People begin to question, okay, where did all this money come? I mean, a lot of people don't even understand, a lot of our residents, and don't expect them to, but we should take it to them to understand you know, the separations in our budget, the difference between the general fund and the enterprise fund for water sewer. People go, well, water rates went up. Well, where's all this money going? They don't understand that money can't flow from the enterprise fund, from water and sewer, into the general fund. So, you know, people will, when you leave them with an absence of information, they will fill that void, right? So they will fill it with, well, they took all the money I paid for my water bill and they put in new trash cans at the park or whatever. You know, they'll make up something, and it's just not true. Now, is that their fault or the town's fault? I think it's the town's fault. If you explain it and communicate it properly, they'll understand. So if I could only have one thing to accomplish, it's not a physical thing, it would be to begin to repair that communication bridge between the residents and citizens and the taxpayers and the town.
Lynn Barbee, thank you so much for taking the time to share your views with our listeners.
Thank you for having me.